Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Ayin Vav Amud Bet, five lines up from the bottom. The Gemara here is discussing the proof that it brought from Daniel with regards to what is called Inui. They were discussing about Sicha and Rechitza. And as part of that, we bumped into a pasuk that ended, Vani Bati Bidvarecha. And it says, because Daniel, you've been so concerned and you've acted in this way, I've come to speak to you and I've come to disclose to you about the information, what information we'll see later on, but the Gemara wants to know, Vani Bati Bidvarecha, who was this person that came? So that's what the Gemara starts with. Mai Vani Bati Bidvarecha, Anu Dichtiv. So the Gemara weaves together, and I got it here that includes Psukim from Yechezkel, as well as from Daniel, and puts a story together that explains to us what happened over here. So the beginning, Yechezkel, this is a Nevuat Yechezkel, which says, there were 70 elders of Beit Yisrael. Azan Yahu ben Shafan omed betocham was amongst them. Omdim lifnehem. V'ish miktarto biyado. Each one of them had their incense in their hand. V'atar anan haktoret oleh, and the thick cloud of the ketoret was going up. And now it says uktiv, and it's a continuation. I was in. They're jumping around in the Perek in Yechezkel. This is Perek Chet Yechezkel. This was Pasuk Yud Aleph. Now they're jumping back to an earlier Pasuk in Yechezkel, which says, Uktiv, Vayishlach, Tavnit Yad, Vayikacheni B'tzitzit Roshi. And there was like an arm that outstretched and grabbed me by the locks of my hair. Vatisauti Ruach. And a wind carried me up, a spirit carried me up, Ben Aretz Ubin HaShemayim, between the heaven and the earth. Vatavei Oti Yerushalayimah. And he brought me to Yerushalayim, Bermarot Elukim, El Petach Shara Pnimit, to the entranceway, to the inner gate, Haponeh Tzafona, that was facing to the north, Asher Sham, Moshav Semel Hakina Hamakneh. There, which is the images of the jealousy, and Hamakneh, that causes tremendous jealousy. Obviously, we're talking about idols of that sort that he's seeing there, and that's reiterated by the pasuk here again in Yechezkel. We're going further in the parak now. Pasuk Tet Zayin, it says, "Vayaveuti achatzar beit Hashem apnimit," brought me to the inner courtyard. "Vinei petach echal Hashem," and there was the entranceway to the echal Hashem, ben ulam ben mizbeach, between the ulam and the mizbeach. Ke'esrim v'chamisha ish, there are like 25 people standing there. Achureihem el echal Hashem, their backs are towards the echal. Upnehem kedma, and they're facing east. Behema mishtachavitem is the word it's misspelled here. Kedma lashomesh. They're bowing down to the east, to the sun. So here you have a description in Yechezkel. The parak is discussing this. Yechezkel gets taken around inside of the courtyards and the Mikdash. And Hashem is showing him all the atrocities that are going on inside of the Mikdash. We saw earlier that he went and he saw the images and the idols that are found in certain areas. And now he's bringing him to these individuals who are supposedly in the process of worship, and in their worship, they're bowing to the east instead of the Eichal to the west. The Eichal or the Kodesh HaKodeshim is in the west. They're bowing to the east with their backs towards the Eichal Hashem. It says, Mimash Mashanemar Ufneim Kedma, if they're facing east, any Odesh Achureim al Eichal Hashem, of course their backs are to the Eichal Hashem because that's in the west. It's a given. So why does the Pasuk tell you both that they're facing east and that their backs are to the Eichal? So they were, whether they uncovered themselves, but it seems even like they relieved themselves in that way. Is again a euphemism that they were showing disdain towards Lamata. Lamata means below, but here it really means Lamala, towards Hashem. That they are basically saying, we don't need you, Hashem. And therefore, they are defecating towards the west and bowing towards the east. And again, the word Baal Peor should remind you of this, a Purim, that same type of Avodah Zarah that's described over there. Amalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Michael. Michael was the Sar of Bnei Yisrael up in Shemaim. Says to Michael, Michael, Sarcha Umatcha. Your nation has gone off the derech, has sinned. Amar Lefanav Ribono Shalom, Dayo Tovim Shevem. Says, look, at least there's some good ones there. Why don't you hang on to the good ones? Amalo, Anisarefu Tam, Ulu Tovim Shebehem Yad. I'm gonna consume, burn up the best of them right away. I mean, I'm going to destroy all of them because of what they are doing. Vayomer, and the word should be ha'ish here, the vush habadim. We have an unidentified individual over here, but it's a ish, levusha badim, the man who is wearing linen. Vayomer.
Typically a male.
Yes. Vayomer, boel beinot lagalgal. Go in between the wheels. El tachad akruv, underneath one of the kruvim. Umalei chofnecha gachalei ish. And fill your hands, your palms, your fistfuls of coals. Mi beinot akruvim. From in between the kruvim, uzrok aleir, and throw it onto the city, viavo leinai, and it will happen, you know, in front of me. It'll happen here. So there, Hashem is instructing whoever this ish is. Well, we'll find out in a second, as you pointed out, as a malach, is Gabriel, and he's instructing him basically to destroy the city of Yerushalayim because of what's transpiring here. We just read from Perachet in Yechezkel. This is in Perek Yud in Yechezkel, and he's basically instructing Gabriel to take the hot coals from between. Now, the images that we're talking about here are the images that Yechezkel had seen in the Maaseh Merkava. So in the Merkava, he's telling him, take these hot coals from where it is and then throw it down on the city. Mayad, what happens right away? Vayishlach ha-kruvet yadol mi benot la-kruvim. One of the kruvim sticks his hand between the other kruvim. Ela ish, ashe benot la-kruvim. To the fire that sits between the kruvim, and then he takes those coals and places them into the hands of the one wearing the linen. He takes it and he leaves. So now, Amar of Chana bar Bizna, Amar of Shimon Chasida, Yomalei lo nitztananu gechalim yado shel kruv, yado shel Gabriel, lo nishtaru misanehem shel Yisrael sarid upalit. So the other girsa here is miyado shel Michael, liyado shel Gabriel. Then there would be nothing left of Sonem shel Yisrael. Again, euphemism. Sonem shel Yisrael is a euphemism for Yisrael. Here he's supposed to throw the coals down on the city and destroy Klal Yisrael. Hashem's instructions were for him, the man who was Levush Badim, to take his fistfuls, go in there and take the coals himself, and then throw them down on the cities. When he actually does it, that's not what happens. He has a crew get the coal, and then pass it to him. So that's what the Gemara is saying here. Had it not been for the fact that the Kruv touched it first, or if the other gear says Michael touched it first, then the coals would have been so hot that when they were thrown down, they would have destroyed all of Klal Yisrael. The only reason there's any remnant of Klal Yisrael is because they were cooled off, these coals, before they were dropped down. Right, because of Klisheni, because he didn't abide by the instructions that Hashem had given him. Uchtiv. And then it says, and here was this the man wearing the linen. Asher keset. Keset is what's used by the scribes. It's an inkwell. Bimadov is around his loins. Meshiv davar lemor. Asiti, and here again the word should be kechol asher. There's no kasher in the pasuk. Tzivitani. I did everything that you would ask me to do. So here is, according to the Gemara, this is Gabriel, who is the man levush badim. He was instructed by Hashem to go get the coals from under, between the wheels and the fire between the wheels under the kruv, and then to throw it down on the city of Yerushalayim to destroy it.
Where did this fire come?
From the Merkava, from up in the, I mean, it's obviously this is up in Shemayim. This is all not literal, but figurative. So now he goes ahead, but he does it, but he doesn't do exactly what Hashem said. He has someone else pass him the coals to throw down. But then he comes back and says, God, I did everything that you asked me to do. Pargod, they took Riel out from behind the curtain, means inside the presence of Hashem. And they struck him with, you could say pulses, 60 pulses of light. So Rashi says it's malkiot, it's lashes of light, whatever that means. They were punishing him. If you didn't do it, you didn't do it. That's fine. Look, if you didn't do it, then fine, you didn't do it. Yavat, if you did do it, why didn't you do it like I told you to do it? So it's one thing if you don't follow the instructions at all, and you don't do it at all, because maybe you were trying to protect Klal Yisrael, you were trying to buy them time so they could do tshuva. Okay? Now, but if you go ahead and do it anyway, then why didn't you do it the way that I told you to do it? Vod, davat, leitlach, in mishivim al kilkala. And even once you did it, don't you have or don't you know the proper etiquette, which is Amy Shivim al Kalkala, We don't respond about destruction. Meaning that when Hashem sends you out to do something that's negative or bad, you don't need to come back and tell him you did it. You only come back and say to someone, I did what you asked, or I did your bidding, when it's something that is good, when it's something for the tova. But it's not proper etiquette to come back and say, yeah, I did it. You know, I went out and I destroyed them all. That's not something that you come back, the news that you come back with. So they're upset at Gabriel for these reasons. Number one is, it would be one thing if he didn't do it at all. At least he would be showing some rachamim on Klal Yisrael. We could have understood that. Not saying that you're right, but we could have understood that. But then when you went ahead and did it, at least do it the way that you're supposed to do it. You didn't follow the instructions. And then beyond that, you came back and said, I did it. I did all that you asked me to do. And first of all, it's clear that he didn't. And number two is that it's not proper etiquette. You don't come back and tell people you fulfilled their instructions in this case. Say, tu'a l'duviel, sarad parsai, v'ukme b'charike. So, after they disposed of Gabriel, they brought in Duviel. Duviel, obviously, from the word dof, from the bear, which in the image of Daniel, in the dream of Daniel, that's the one that represents Persia, Paras. Sarad parsai, he is the prince of Paras, but we're talking about Ibn Shemaim, he's the, right, the malach, that is, Mumuner al Paras. V'ukme b'charike, put him in his place. Meaning the place that Gabriel had vacated. Shemash esrim v'chad yom. And he served there for 21 days. Hainu dichtiv. That's what it said in Daniel. Now we jump back and say they weave between the, I got this, the images in Yechezkel back to Daniel now and says, the sar machut paras omed l'negdi esrim v'chad yom. So the sar of paras is standing there opposite me for 21 days. V'nei Michael, achad asarim arishonim, bala azreini. And then Michael, one of the Sarim, he's the Sar of Israel, came to help me. But he notarti sham etzel Malchei Paras. And I had to stay there under the dominion of Malchei Paras. So here the Gemara is weaving what's seen in Daniel into this Agadita, saying that Gabriel, who is dismissed and thrown out, he's telling Daniel that Michael is helping him out a little bit, but he's under the dominion of Malach, the Sar of Paras, because the Sar of Paras now has been given his place inside of the pargod, because Gabriel was thrown out for what he did. Said, Yahavu le yasrim v'chad malchei upravata de mishayik. They granted the Melech HaParas 21 kingdoms. Upravato, as Rashi says, is the port. De mishig. Mishig is the name of a place. Rashi says it's the royal port. So, what being described here is the Persian conquest, where they're gonna, the Media Persian Empire, which is gonna take over, and it's gonna expand. So in their conquest, it's being described here, is that the Tsar of Malchei Paras is given the right to rule there for 21 days. And they see that representing the 21 kings or kingdoms that he's going to take over, as well as this major port that they're gonna take over. Amar Ktivuli li Yisrael Bakargo. So he says, I'm in charge now. I want Bnei Yisrael for the poll tax. So this is a head tax that the people pay to the government. Says, I want them be my subjects or subject to me, and they're going to have to pay the taxes. Meaning that Bnei Israel, well, the Jews will have to pay taxes to the Persians. Katvulei. So they wrote it to him. Ktivulei Rabbanan. I want the rabbis, I want the Talmidei Chachamim as well, Akarga, to pay, have to pay the taxes. Katvulei. They wrote it to him. They gave him everything he wanted. Bidana de Bailu Mechtam. The time that he wanted, they had to sign on it. So they wrote out the shtar of Shemaim, and now they have to sign on the shtar. Amad Gabriel Me'achareya Pargod. Gabriel from Me'achareya Pargod. He's not inside anymore. He's on the outside. He speaks up. Bamar. Shav lachem mashkimei kum. Me'acharei shevet. Ochle lechem hatzavim. Kein yiten li dido. Shav for not. Lachem mashkimei kum. Those that rise early in the morning. Me'acharei shevet. That stay out late. Ochle lechem hatzavim. Who eat the bread of toil. Kein yiten li dido. Sheina. Do they give this to their beloved one sleep? So my kain yitain li dido sheina. What does it mean that they give to their beloved one sleep? Amar Yitzchak elu nishutayim shel tamid chachamim. These are the wives of tamid chachamim shimnadadot sheina b'olam hazeh v'zochot l'olam haba. That they lose sleep in this world, but they're zochet to sleep or to enjoy the olam haba. So Gabriel comes to the defense of Bnei Israel, or the Chachamim, the Talmidei Chachamim at that time, and says, is all that they do for naught, that they get up early in the mornings, and they stay up late at night, and they eat the bread of toil, and they aren't zochet to sleep, they aren't zochet to get that sleep, who's that referring to? That's referring to the wives of the Talmidei Chachamim. So b'zchutam, they should be protected. But the wives of the Talmidim not sleep? Because either because they're, the Talmidim Chachamim are away learning, and they have to take care of all the items of the house and the children. Also because they're poor and in poverty, and so they have to work very hard to bring in the bread and to work with what they have. So because of that, and also the Gemara in Sotah describes that they wait up late for their husbands to come home from the Beit Midrash, and their husbands get up early to leave for the Beit Midrash. So they're a party to their husband's dedication to Torah. And so because of that, they deserve the reward. And they didn't listen to him. If all the wise men of the world were on one side of the scale, and Daniel, the pleasant one, is on the other side of the scale, Lo nimtza machriat kulam. When he, you know, machriya here means tip the scale in his favor, but means isn't he worth more than all of them together? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mi hu zeh? Shem lamed zchut al banai. Who is this person here who is talking on behalf of my children, trying to speak in their merit to be their defender? Amru lefanav, rim rosh olam, Gavriel. It's Gavriel. You know, the one that you kicked out. It's him. Samarlehem, Yavo, he can come back in. Shinemar, Vani Bati Bidvarecha. And that's what the Gemara goes back to. Ani Bati Bidvarecha is Gabriel telling Daniel, because of you, I was able to come. Meaning because I used, your name was the secret password that got me back in there. So Ani Bati Bidvarecha. Because of you, I was able to return back inside. So Amarlo Le'ul. So you say, come back in. Ailihu. They brought him back in. Ata Ashvechei the Dubiel. He was holding these two writs in his hand, the two taxation writs that they had written up before, one for the Bnei Israel and one for the Talmidei Chachamim. By the Mirma Minei, Gabriel wanted to go take it back from him, steal him back from him. Bala, he swallowed it. He didn't want him to get it back, so he swallows it. They were written, but not signed and sealed yet, and he swallowed them without being signed and sealed. They were signed and sealed. Okay, but when he swallowed it, he erased the seal or the signature from it. Hainu, and why is, what's this a guy that they're coming to explain? Hainu de machuta de paras. That under the Persian Empire, some people pay tax and some people don't pay tax. It's not a consistent thing across the board that everybody pays taxes. It's, whether it's random or only some do, some don't. Whatever the reasons are, they're explaining why that is. Why is it that the taxation that is imposed by the government of Persia, by the Melch of Persia, is sporadically either collected or only collected from some people and not others, is because of this story that they're describing here, this Agadic story, that the Sar of Paras had asked for this, but it never really got finished. The deal never got sealed and signed, and therefore they only get this partial taxation. Vani Yotzei, and then it describes over there, I went out, Vinei Sar Yavan Ba. The minister, the prince, the malach of Yavan, of the Greece, comes. So we know that historically, and that's what's described in Daniel, that Yavan is going to override Persia. The Alexander the Great and the Greek Empire is going to expand to the point where they push back the Persian Empire. And I was saying, whether it's Evi Evi or Oi Oi, V'leka Dashkach Be. I was saying, oh no, no. Trying to defend Bnei Israel, that Yavan should not have power over them. And V'lo Ashkachvei, nobody listened, saying that the Greeks are going to override the Jews as well. Which you know what's happened, that the Greeks overrode the area of Eretz Yisrael. They took it over, and then later on, after the Greek dominion or the empire split up into three or four parts, then later on we have the story of Chanukah. So over here, this is that prelude to that, which is that they're going to take over, and they're going to subjugate the Jews. And Gabriel was unsuccessful at protecting them from this. So now we come back to our original question, which is, where do we know Rechitza from? So the Gemara had started out with Rechitza and they went to Daniel. And so once we talked about Daniel, we went through a Zagado about Daniel. And now we're coming back to say, well, we have another way to figure out that Rechitza is Inui. Not just from Daniel, here's the alternative way. From here, Dichtiv, it says in the beginning of Malachim Aleph, this is after the death of David. And Shlomo HaMelech was instructed by David to take care of certain people who had not acted properly. One of those people is Eviatar HaKohen, who was the Kohen Gadol that served under David, the last his rank, and was given to Tzadok HaKohen. Late in David's life, Eviatar joins the rebellion of Adoniyahu. He joins his grouping, so clearly he's not in good standing. So Shlomo Melech has to take care of him now. Now that he's the king, what does he do with this Eviatar HaKohen? So he says to him, Eviatar HaKohen Amar HaMelech, Anatot Lech El Sadecha, go back to Anatot, to your field. Anatot is a place that we know today. It's in Binyamin, near Psagot, when you go up that, when you go by Wadi Kelt. Over there, that's where the area of Anatot. Now, Anatot, we know from Yirmiyahu and Navi, it's a place of the Kohanim. It's a city of Kohanim. And so he's saying to him, go back to your fields in Anatot, right back to the hometown. Kish mavet ata, you really are disturbing of death. But I won't kill you today. I won't put you dead today. That's Mr. Vener. It should be Hashem Elokim. Lifnei David. Avi. Because you carried the Aron Hashem before David, my father. And you went through all the afflictions and the difficulties that my father went through. If Eviatar HaKohen joins David when he's around in the Midbar running away from Shaul, he's also there when he was thrown out of Yerushalayim by Avshalom. So Eviatar has been through some very difficult times with David. And since he carried the Aron Hashem, Shlomo says, look, I'm going to let you go back to your hometown and don't show your face anymore. Right? You're going into retirement, but I'm not going to kill you, even though you're deserving of death because you went with Adoniyahu's party instead of mine. But I'm giving you that dispensation. But the focus here is on this idea that he was oppressed along with David. What was that? V'chtiv bei David. What is written by David? Ki amru ha'am. This is when David runs out of Yerushalayim, and Achitophel tells Avshalom he should chase David right away. And Hushai Arki was left behind by David to the Sakelet Atzata Achitophel, to ruin the advice of Achitophel. And he succeeds in doing that and saying, don't chase David today, get the troops together, and you'll go tomorrow and chase them down. He sends out the children of Eviatar and Sadok, who were back there as runners or spies. He sends them out to David and tells him, move fast, don't stay around. And so David runs all night, and they cross over the Yarden. They cross over into the eastern side of the banks of the Yarden. And when they get there, there is a triumvirate that takes care of them. Of people, one of them you might know is Barzillai Giladi, who later on David rewards for his help in this situation. And they feed the people and take care of them. So there it says, Kiamru. Why do they take care of them? Kiamru, Am Ra'ev V'ayef V'tzamei Bamidbar. The people were, clearly, they've been running from Yerushalayim all night, and they get to Eivar Yarden, so the people are ra'if, they're hungry, va'yef, and tired, vitzameh, and thirsty, ba'midbar, because they've been going through the midbar, they've been traversing the entire midbar Yehuda all night to get here. Ra'if, milechem. What does it mean, hungry? Hungry is they have no food. Vitzameh, mimayim. Tzameh means that they don't have any water. Ayef, mimay. What are they tired from? Lav mirechitza. Isn't it because they haven't bathed, they haven't washed themselves? So it says, Dilma minilata sandal. How do you know that? Maybe it's because they weren't wearing shoes, because they had taken their shoes off, or their shoes were, you know, from the running. Right. Obviously, the pshat is that they're ayef from running all night, that they've been walking all night. But then, what do you need now? When someone's ayef, okay, what do you give them? So they gave them beds. It says over there they gave them beds as well. But what do they need now? Do they need a washing, or do they need to take off their shoes? What do they need to do to take care of their tiredness? Alamar Yitzchak mihocho. Yitzchak says, okay, we can't learn it out from David, because it's not clear there that the ayefut that we're speaking about necessarily is rechitza, which would have paralleled with what was said to Abiatar, that hitanita, that you were inui with David. So that would have been our proof, but the problem is that ayef, it's not clear that that's talking about rechitza. So we say, okay, we have another. Alam Rav Yitzchak Mihocha, we'll take it from here, which is from Mishlei. It says, Maim Karim al nefesh ayefa. Cold water on the tired and thirsty soul. I mean, that's the greatness of cold water to one who is tired and thirsty. And then the pasuk is using that as a parallel to how good something is. It's as good as cold water to someone who is thirsty and tired. Vidilma mishtei, right? Mishtayo. Maybe it's talking about drinking. Isn't that the, right? Not cold washing, but rather drinking. Miktiv bin nefesh ayefa. It doesn't say Mayim Karim bin Nefesh Ayefa, which means that he internalized it, that he drank it. Al Nefesh Ayefa means on the tired soul. on the tired soul means that the water, the cold water on the tired soul. It's getting after a long run, a nice cold shower, so that it cools you off, you may feel better. Alright, so that's how we get to Rechitza. We had three different ways to look at it. We had once in Daniel, talking about Vesach lo sachti. That was the first attempt. Then we had it by David HaMelech. We tried through the fact that Eviatar HaKohen was Hitanita, that you were in Inui with David, and we know when they left Yerushalayim and ran away from Yerushalayim, it says Ayefa. And then the last group we brought was from Mishlei, which said that Ayefa and Mayim Karim are the opposites. And what type of Mayim Karim is it? Is this drinking or bathing? And we say it's bathing because it says Al Nefesh Ayefa. That the Mayim Karim on the tired soul, that shows you that bathing is what's being spoken about here. And we see that if that's considered to be great, then obviously abstaining from it is something that's called Inui. Now, Nilata Sandal Minalan. How do we know that not wearing shoes is classified as Inui? Dichtiv. V'David ole b'malei azitim ole uveche v'rosh lo chafui v'hu holeich. Again, it's the misquoted pasuk. Yachif. So this is David when he left Yerushalayim. As he's leaving Yerushalayim, he leaves to the east, Har HaZeitim, which is on the eastern side. And we know that because then he continues on through the Midbar to Eber Yerdain, to the eastern side. We read the latter half of that story just now. This is the earlier part of the story when he's leaving Yerushalayim. He's going up the mountain. He's ole b'malei HaZeitim. He's going up the mountain of Har HaZeitim. Ole u'boche. Rising, meaning as he goes up the mountain, he's crying. V'rosh lo chafui. And his head is uncovered. V'olech yachef. And he's walking barefoot. I mean, he's bavelut. He is about the situation that his whole family and he has been thrown out of Yerushalayim. And he thinks that Hashem has basically expelled him. Doesn't want him anymore. And his son of Shalom has now come into Yerushalayim. Yachef mimai. What does barefoot mean? What does it mean, yachef? La minilata sandal. Doesn't mean that he didn't have shoes on. And again, connecting it back to Eviatar HaKohen, who went out with him, we saw before, that's called Vitanita. That he was afflicted or oppressed at that time, because Eviatar is with him, and here it's describing David as being barefoot. It says, Dilma misusia umiritka. Maybe that means yachef. Barefoot means that he's without his horse, the royal horse, and his whip or his guide. That he doesn't have the trappings of the king anymore. He's without. He has to walk, and he doesn't have the royal chariot or the royal horse to take him. Alamar of Nachum Yitzchak Miocha. It's over here. It says to Yishayahu lech upitachta sak mi'al motnecha minalcha tachalot mi'al raglecha. Go and take off the sackcloth from your loins. Minalcha tachalot mi'al raglecha, and take off the shoes from on your feet. Uchtiv. It says afterwards, v'yasakein, he did that. Haloch arom v'yachef. And then he was walking around naked and barefoot. Yachef mimai. La mininata sandal. What does barefoot mean? It means that he doesn't have his shoes on. Ve'ema b'minaleim hametulaim. Let's say that, no, not that he doesn't have shoes on. It's just that his shoes are in tatters. He's wearing shoes with holes in them. Not that he has to take off his shoes, but he just has shoes that are no longer really good shoes. Dilo te'ma'ochi. Because if you don't say this, Arum, the pasuk says that he was naked then. Arum mamash. You think that the Navi in this vision is going to be completely naked? Ela bibegadim bluim. It must be that we're talking about tattered clothing. So if that's the case, achanami bimalaim minalaim mitulaim. So too, we're talking about tattered shoes. So it's not that he told him to take off his clothes and take off his shoes. He said, you're no longer going to have good clothing or good shoes because the situation is difficult. And he's trying to describe to him how bad things are in Yishayahu. What the Gemara is trying to prove from over here is that Yishayahu, when it says Yachef, it clearly means Yachef means barefoot and not with shoes. Because then we could take that definition and move it over to David HaMelech. Because Yishayahu doesn't ride around on a horse. And he doesn't have a royal chariot. So it's clear that when he's talking about Yachef here, it's something to do with his shoes. So if we can prove that Yachef in Yishayahu means barefoot, then we would say by David it also means barefoot. But the Gemara pushed back against it and says it's not clear that it means barefoot by Yishayahu. So Amar Rav Nachum Yitzchak Miocha. We're learning from here. It says, Mini Raglech Miyochef Ugronech Mitzima. It says in Yirmiyahu, it's a Haftorah that you know, Zachatilach Chesed Niurayich, talking about Bnei Israel in their younger years when they did good, and also Hashem giving them Nechama that in the future, things will get better. And it says, Minech raglech miyachif, you know, take back your feet will no longer be barefoot. Ugronech mitzima, and your throats will not be dry from thirst. Miniatzmech minachet, kadesh lo yavo raglech lidei yichuf. Says, Darshan's apostle, hold back yourself from sinning so that your feet will not be uncovered, barefoot. Minilashonech midvarim betelim, hold your tongue, meaning your speech, from doing things that are worthless. Kadesh lo yavo ugronech lidei tzima, so that your throat does not become dry. So he reads this as being an instruction. If you don't want to be barefoot and you don't want to be thirsty, then act appropriately. And that's how these things will happen. So based on that, he says it's clear here that yachef means barefoot over here, because minei ragleich mi yachef. Here there's a clear connection between regel and yachef. So we're clearly talking about shoes, and here there's no reason to believe that we're talking about tattered shoes, because there's nothing about tattered here. It just means remove your shoes. Remove them. So minei ragleich mi yachef, to hold yourself back from being barefoot. You're going to have shoes on. So yachef clearly means barefoot, and now if I take that back to David HaMelech and say that he was barefoot, and then I know from Shlomo's instructions to Eviatar, that means that it was vehita nita, that you were afflicted, therefore I know that barefoot means inui. That's the equation, and that's how we know that shoes are also one of the inuyim. Now, tashmisha mita dikre inui min alon. So now the next of them, how do we know that tashmisha mita is called inui? Dikhtiv. Im taned bnotai. So here it's referring to Lavan when he's speaking to Yaakov at Tigar Satuta and Galaid, where they make the covenant between them, and he says about that, that the part of the covenant is Im Taned Bnotai, if you afflict my daughters, Vim Tikach Nashim, and if you take new women, new wives. So now the Gemara says, what does that mean? Im Taneh Mitashmish, Vim Tikach Mitzarot. If you Taneh Inui Mitashmish, mean that you don't provide them with their conjugal rights. V'im tikach mitzarot means that you take new co-wives. So that's what he's making Yaakov promise, that he'll take care of his daughters, and that he won't take new co-wives. V'eima idi v'idi mitzarot. Who says that the first half of the pasuk is talking about their rights? Why don't you say that the first half of the pasuk is also talking about tzarot? So the Gemara says, mitiv im tikach. The pasuk doesn't say im tikach, but rather ve'im tikach. If you say im tikach, then it would suggest that that's defining what the taned bnotai is in the first half of the pasuk. What's the inui bnotai? Im tikach. If you take new co-wives, that will be the affliction of my daughters. So if it was defining the first half of the pasuk, there should not be a vav in between. The fact that there's a vav in between tells you that the end, but it's an end of vav achiluk. It's saying that the first half and the second half of the pasuk are not defining each other. They're two separate issues. So that's what it says. It says, miktiv im tikach, which we're defining the im taneh, the im tikach tiv, right? Or, and. That's what's being said here, but it's separating between the first half. It says, ema id v'id mitzarot. Why don't you say that both of them are for the tzarot? Chad the tzarot today, v'chad the tzarot de'atin la me'almo. One of them is for his own tzarot, and one of them is for tzarot that come from outside. So what would that be? He has four wives right now. He has two wives and two shvachot. So what is from the inside? That you don't elevate the shvachot to be co-wives. So that's the first request. And the second request is don't take co-wives from the outside. So the two of those together, maybe that's what it means, im taneh. Taneh is don't elevate the shvachot to co-wives. And the im tikach is referring to outside wives. So the Gemara says, no, you can't say that. Dumya de im tikach. It has to be similar to im tikach. Similar to the latter half of the pasuk. Miktiv im tikach. Again, it doesn't say im tikach. Vi im taneh. If that's the case, then the im tikach should have led the pasuk, which is, first of all, im tikach is outside wives. Then im taneh is taking the internal wives. If you're going to make him promise something, you make him promise the thing that is the worst thing first, and then you take the lighter thing. So if you have it this way, the way it's written now, im taned bnotai is to elevate the shvachot, and im tikach is to take outside wives. That doesn't make sense. It should be the other way around. So if I promise that you're not going to take any external wives, and then promise that you won't elevate the shvachot, even that you won't do. So now, but the pasuk says, im taned v'im tikach. It says it the other way around, k'tiv, and therefore it doesn't make a logical sense that that would be promised. And therefore, the Gemara believes that The Inui refers to Tashmish, and the Tikach refers to taking of co-wives. And from here you prove that Inui is connected to Tashmish Amita. Why are you going over there and looking for a hint in the Pasuk saying that that Inui references Tashmish? We have it explicit in the Pasuk that Tashmish is Inui. Because it says by Shechem, when he rapes Dina, it says by Ishkabuta, that he slept with her and he oppressed her. So Inui is used in the context of Tashmish over here. You have it clearly. Over there, that has to do with more than that. Vayishkavuta was that he raped her. Then Vianna is that he did beyond that. So what did he do beyond that? Rashi brings two interpretations. One is ina mibiota chirot, that he slept with her in all different ways, but he rejects that interpretation because it doesn't read well into what the Gemara is saying. He says, because then it should have said bibiot achirot. But rather, mibiot achirot means that he withheld bia. That after he slept with her the first time, she desired to be with him again, and he withheld it from her. And that's the inui afterwards. You have to explain it that inui here, first of all, is separate from tashmish amita, which means regular engagement at tashmish amita. The inui here is specific to not coming together with the woman at the time of ona, the time that she is entitled to demand that she has her own out. If that's the way you explain Inui, then it would not preclude Tashmish HaMishta on Yom HaKippurim. It would only preclude a woman during her own out that her husband sleeps with her during Yom HaKippurim. So it would be a very limited scope of what the Inui of Tashmish HaMishta is, rather than the broader scope that Inui and Tashmish HaMishta are synonymous. So over here it's separating and saying, no, that it's the withholding of Tashmish HaMishta at the time that the woman has the right to demand it. That's called Inui. So if that's the case, that's all you would have to abstain from on Yom HaKippurim. It's not universal Tashmish HaMita, which is what the Gemara is after. Torah Banan, Asur lechotz miktzat gufo kuchol gufo. Now let it be the part of your body, like your whole body. V'maya, most people have a girsa here, yadav mulachlach, or mulachlachot betit. His hands are dirty with plaster, or betzoa, or feces. V'chetz kidarko, ve'eno choshesh. You can wash normally, and you don't have to worry about it. Discussed this yesterday. I'll come back and speak about it again. Asur lasuch miktzat gufo kochol gufo. You cannot anoint a part of your body like your whole body. If he was sick or he has scabs on his head, he anoints himself without any problem. So these were yesterday the proofs that the Rabbeinu Tam brought that it's clear that the Inuim, besides achilan shtiyah, are not only not chayav karet, they're not doraita. But I'm in a Torah, because these dispensations, how could you have dispensations on a din d'oraita? It's clear that these are dinim d'rabbanan, because you have these dispensations, if it's already d'rabbanan, they can decide what's yes and what's no. Again, as I said to you yesterday, the majority of the Rishonim do not follow that direction and say that the Inuim are d'oraita, and they have to face this issue of what do you do with it. So the Yireim says that rechitzat kol gufo is the only thing that's asur midoraita. Mina Torah, washing of the entire body is problematic. That's whether it's cold water or hot water, but washing the entire body. Less than the entire body, that's already only midrabanan. So now, when you're dealing with it, that's what it says here, that even though kol gufo is doraita, that the rabbanan imposed, that even mitzat gufo is problematic. But then, what they talk about here, even when the Rabbanan said mitzvah gufo is problematic, then there are these dispensations to work with over here. That's the way the Yireim deals with it. Others, like the Ran, suggest, and the Ramban somewhat says this on the Torah as well, the Ran and the Ramban say, that the Torah talks about Inui, but it doesn't explicitly describe it. And therefore, it's nitan l'chachamim to interpret it. The chachamim get to determine the parameters of the Doraita. So it is Doraita, but the guidelines are set by the chachamim. So you get the equivalent of a Durabonon, but it really has the tokef or the power of a Doraita because they're defining the Doraita. And then others describe it as the issue of Oneg, which we've described before, which is that Rechitza Shel Oneg is what's problematic. The instruction is Inui, that you have to be afflicted. What offsets Inui is Oneg, is pleasure. If the washing is not for pleasure, then it's not a problem, it's not a violation. And that's what's happening over here. When you have your hands are covered in teat or in soa, the washing of the hands is not a pleasure, it's to remove the dirt or what's on your hands, because otherwise you can't function. So that removing of that is not oneg, that's simply removing the dirt. And the same with the sach over here, the sach is only utilized in a sense when it's not for oneg, it's only due to either by a chule, because of the sickness, or with the scabs on the head to prevent them from becoming more problematic, but it's not done for the pleasure, and therefore it's not an offset to the inui. And that's the third way that you'd have to deal with this. Tana de Bei Manashe, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Madicha Isha Yada, Achat Vamayim, Venotenet Pat Latinok, Veno Chosheshet. A woman is allowed to wash one of her hands in order to pass food to a child. All right, this is extremely controversial. Rashi over here says, this is Miruach Ra. Ruach Ra, that comes on the hands, you're allowed to wash Negovasser in one hand in order to give the bread to the child. Because otherwise it's dangerous. And you can't feed the bread to the child with the Ruach Ra on your hand. So because of that, we allow you, entitle you to wash one hand. As Rashi says over here, the fish Ruach Ra Shura al Alechem, and it'll be a dime shlo netlan shacharit. You didn't wash Negovasser in the morning. Shema Shed Shifta. That's the name of the shade that comes on the hand. So Rashi is indicating that he didn't wash Negovasser in the morning, and therefore she's entitled, or if she needs to give bread to the child, she has to wash that one hand. So that's permitted because there the washing, again, is for all the reasons that we said before. Either it's the Rabbanon, or it's not Kol Gufa, or it's defined by the Rabbanon, or it's not Oneg. It's not pleasure. This is a danger to the child, so we allow you to wash the Negovasser. That's what Rashi says, wash one hand Negovasser. And it takes care of the Ruach Ra, you can pass the bread to the child. Tosfot says, I don't understand what he's talking about. Rabbeinu Tam Afresh, Del Belo Venetina Panet Tinok Mutar Lito Yadav Shacharit V'Yom HaKippurim. Says, who needs to pass bread to wash Negovasser in the morning? Says, you're allowed to wash Negovasser in the morning on Yom Kippur, period. Because of the Ruach Ra. The Ruach Ra that comes in your hands is dangerous to your eyes, to your mouth, all the other dangers that we've talked about in the past about Ruach Ra on your hands. You can wash Negovasser on the morning of Yom Kippur, irrespective of if you're handing food to children or not. She says, I don't know what Rashi's talking about, washing Negovasser here. This is the dispensation to wash Negovasser? No. You wash Negovasser anyway. How far on your hand you wash Negovasser? That's the subject of the machloket of how far you need to wash your hands in general. Whether you have to wash up to your knuckles or up to your wrist. In general, we're machmir for the shita of up to your wrist. But on Yom Kippur, where there's a doraita on the other side, we only wash up to our knuckles because there's not to be choshish for that shita in a makom where it's aser berachitza, that we don't do. Alright, so we wash up to our knuckles. So the Rabbeinu Tam says, I don't know what he's talking about. You're going to wash Negovasser anyway. There's nothing to do with this. So what is this? He says, oh, this shade is a shade that comes for giving food to young children. He says, Shorel ochel shebali tein pat letinog ben dali behe shanim. You give it to them when they're 4 or 5 years old. V'chon kato. And it causes him to choke. Im lo natal yadab oto sha'a. If you don't wash your hands at that time. And the Oruch over here, the Rabbi Kiva quotes the Oruch that says that mi ben bet chodashim, from 2 months old ad zayin shanim until 7 years old, there's this danger. Where ruach ra ochezet atinok b'tzavaro b'mafareket, it grabs onto the child from the back of his neck, b'gidim, the sinews shachrei atzavaro miyabeshet otam, and it dries them out, u'mitnavna, and the child slowly deteriorates. So there's a description of this. So then, Rabbeinu Tam has a bigger problem now. He says, I've never seen anybody wash their hands for giving bread to a little kid. How come we don't worry about that? We don't find this Ruach Ra in our countries. Just like we don't worry about Zugot, we discussed this extensively in Psachim, and we don't worry about Giloy, leaving water open overnight. We don't worry about all these issues. Why not? Because we see that these issues don't come up. They're not our issues for us. So since we don't see them being a problem, we don't deal with them. So this is one of the major sources here. This Tosafot for the issues by Zugot. How come we don't worry about all these other issues? How come we don't consider them? It says in our countries, we don't see that it's a problem. And since we have evidence that it's not a problem, then we don't worry about it anymore. All right. Tarabanan. Ho'lech lakpil b'nei aviv, o b'nei rabbo. Yes, you're right. Amru la ba Shemai Zakein. They said about Shemai Zakein, Shelo Ratzel Achil Biyado Achat. He didn't even want to wash one hand to feed his child. He didn't want to feed him at all because he didn't want to have to wash it all in Yom Kippur. B'gazu alav l'chlil b'shtei yadayim. So they said to him, you're going to wash both hands and you're going to feed it. We don't want people learning from you the wrong thing. You're allowed to feed children on Yom Kippurim. And biyadayim, you're allowed to give it to them. And you're going to wash and you're going to do it because that's the proper way to conduct yourself. And we don't want people learning from you not to wash your hands and not to feed their children on Yom HaKippurim. My time up. Amar Abayim Mishum Shifta. Because of this shade of Shifta, it's dangerous. Sakanat Nefashot. There's no question that you wash when there is Sakana. Tan Rabbanan. Olech Lakpil B'nei Aviv, O'Pnei Rabo, O'Pnei Misha Gadol Mimenu. Someone is going to visit his father, his Rebbe, or someone who's greater than him, he's allowed to traverse a waterway up to his neck and not worry about it. Even though he's going to get wet, his clothing is going to get wet, he's allowed to do this to go do the mitzvah of being mevaker in these individuals. What about a Rebbe going to his Tamid? Is this only a unidirectional thing that the Tamid go to the Rebbe? What about the Rebbe to the Tamid? Tashma, Dam Rav Yitzchak bar Bar Chana, Ana Chazite L'Ziiri, Asa Ziri Dazel L'Gabi Rav Chia Bar Ashi Tamidei. That he went to visit Rav Chia Bar Ashi's Tamid and he went through water. Rav Ashi Amar, Hau Rav Chia Bar Ashi Hu Dazel L'Gabi D'Ziiri Rabbe. You got the story backwards. The story is that Rav Chia Bar Ashi went to visit his Rebbe Ziiri. Rava Shara L'Bnei Eivir Yamina L'Mavar B'Mayel and Turei Peiro. Rava, who is in Mechuza, that's his city, is the Rava Mechuza. Shara L'Bnei Eivir Yamina. He allowed the people on the Yamina, means the right, but Yamina we know means south. On the south bank of Mechuza, the Mevar B'Mayel, to cross over the river, L'Turei Peiro, to go watch their orchards or take care of their orchards, meaning to make sure that nothing was happening in their orchards. So he allowed them to cross the water, despite the fact that it is Eser B'Rechitza. Again, it goes back to all the reasons that we spoke before, which is that it's not been done for Oneg, it's not been done for Buchicha, it's not Kol Gufo, it's not intending for Rechitza, all of these dispensations. I'm Leah by the Rovo. Tanya de Misayeloch. I have a bright that supports your understanding. Shumrei Peirot, Ovrimat Savram B'mayim, Min Choshishim. The people who are going to watch the orchards are allowed to go up to their necks in water and they don't have to worry about it. Now, obviously, it's interesting that this is what they're doing on Yom HaKippurim. They're going to watch their orchards. It could be that this is also in reference to Shabbat, not just into Yom HaKippurim, because you have the same problem on Shabbat. Not because of, partly because of Rechitza, but more problem when your clothing gets saturated with water, and it's a problem of Schita afterwards. Rav Yosef, Sharlu b'nei Bei Tarbu, l'me'avar b'mayi l'me'itei l'pirka. Yosef permitted the people of Bei Tarbu to cross over the water to come to the drasha on Yom Kippur. Bei Tarbu was a small village. He allowed the villagers to come to the drosha on Yom Kippur. The meza lo shardu, but to go back home, he didn't let them cross the water to go back home. It's an important principle. He says, if you don't let them go back, they're not coming in the future. Because if they find out, figure out they're trapped, once they come here, they're not going to come to the drosha because they know they can't get home.
I was thinking about the other way
around. Iga damre shardu the meza. Yosef permitted them to come to the drosha and to go back home from the drosha. Amalei abayi bishlam the meite the chayit. I understand why you allowed them to come. They're coming to hear the drasha. El amezal my daima. Why'd you let them go home? There's no mitzvah now to cross through the water. So the reasoning that Abai gave before, which is, now Rav Yosef's the one who did it, which is that if you don't let them go home, they're not going to come in the future. So this is a principle that we see many times, that we allow people to go and come back, because if you don't allow them to come back, they're never going to go again, because they know they're going to be trapped, and that's going to dissuade them from making that move or making that decision. Rav Yosef.
Doctors in a hospital.
Correct. So doctors is not so simple. Right? Rav Moshe Feinstein, with doctors, we learned this when we did an Erevin, did permit doctors to come back for that reason, but many of his contemporaries, including Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rav Adi Yosef, took issue with Rav Moshe's psak because they described the Gemara there only in Dinei Derabanan, not in violations de Oraita. Rav Moshe allows it even with violations de Oraita, and therefore they disagree with Rav Moshe. But I showed you at the time that Rav Adi Yosef says, I don't think it's right, and neither also the Tzitz Eliezer. But he says, Rav Moshe said it, I have to respect it. I mean that even though he says I disagree, he says Rav Moshe is a big enough gun, has big enough shoulders to be somech. If you want to follow his ruling, but I don't, he rules against him. Rav Yehuda, Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yehuda, Avakaimi Aguda Denar. Here either it's Papa or Nar Prat. They were on the bank of this river. Amavra de Chatzdod, at the ford or the place where they're crossing of Chatzdod, Babukai Rami Bar Papa Machpisa. Rami Bar Papa was on the other side. Ramaluhu Kalo. He raised his voice, called out to them. Maul de Mevar, the mate of the Gabai who the Mishal Shmaita. Can I come across to ask you a halacha question? Amalei Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, Rav Shmuel Damrei Tarvayu. Rav Yehuda is a Talmud of both Rav and Shmuel says, they both said, Over, Vavajlo Yutzi Yadom Itachat Chefet Chaluko. That he can cross as long as you don't take your arm out from underneath the hem of your chaluk, your tunic. What he doesn't want you to do, he wants you to wear your tunic straight through. What he doesn't want you to do is pick up the tunic and wrap it around your neck as if you are taking it off or laundering it in there. He wants you to wear it normally so you come out normally. So first of all, you won't squeeze it out because you're just wearing it and you're not got like a towel around your neck and also doesn't look like you're laundering it in the river. Igadamre Amalei Rav Shmuel by Rav Yehuda Tanina. We have a bright or we've learned over Ubavachal Domitakat Khefet Khaluka. You can cross, but you just can't take your arms out. You can't raise your tunic up to your neck level so it doesn't get wet. Matkifla Rav Yosef. Ubechol ki Igabna Mishari. Who allows you to go? Forget about Yom Kippur. Forget about Shabbat. On a weekday, are you allowed to cross a river like this? Vaktiv. Doesn't it say by Yechezkel? This should be familiar to you. We learned this in Shkalim. In Shkalim, when we're talking about Shar HaMayim, the water that came out of the Mikdash, then we brought the Psukim from Yechezkel to describe that the waters Latid Lavod Yechezkel are to come out. And those waters that came out, Vayamad Elef Ba'ama, I measured out 1,000 Amot, Vayirini Ba'mayim Me'af Saim. The depth of the water was up to my ankles. Mikan Shemutar Lavor Adav Saim. So it says, if your water is up to your ankles, you can traverse the water. Vayamad Elef, he measured another 1,000 Amot, Vayirini Ba'mayim Mayim Birkayim. I went through the water and the water was up to my knees. Mikan Shemutar Lavor Ad Birkayim. So there you can see, you're permitted to go up to your knees. V'yamad elef, he does another 1,000 amot of distance. V'yamad mei motnayim, the water reached up to my loins. Mikan shemutar lavor ad motnayim, from here you see it's permitted to go up to your loins. Mikan ve'elech, from them onward, v'yamad elef, nachal asher lo uchal lavor. At that point I couldn't cross it anymore, I couldn't traverse the water anymore. So if that's the case, you see that up ankle deep, knee deep, and waist deep water is okay to cross. But if you're talking about water above that level, if you're not permitted to cross it, it's dangerous to cross it. That's what Yechezkel says, I can't cross the water anymore. So why are we letting these people cross through the water like this? Right. That's what he's saying. Behold, on a weekday, can you do this? Rabbi Shani Nachal Deredife Mayo. You're talking about Yechezkel, you're talking about a fast running water. You're talking about something that has a current to it, then it's dangerous. Over here, we're talking about canals, we're talking about slow water. Over there, it's not a big deal to cross up to your neck. You have to judge the type of water that you're crossing through. If it's fast-moving water, then it's a problem. But if it's slow water, you can even go up to your neck. Yochol yavirenu besichui. You would think you could, like, swim across or use a raft to get across, going back to the Pesukim in Yechezkel. Tamal Omar. Ki ga'u amayim meishachu. It was meishachu. That the waters had risen so far, meishachu, to swim in them. Now, over there, it sounds like you can swim in them, but they, things like the Gemara's reading as misachu, they're so high that you can't swim through them. My meisachu, what is this meisachu? Shuta, which is the floating. Shekein korim l'shaita saicho. So that they call the shaita swimming, or floating, saicho. So that's the connection here. Yocho yavirenu beburni ktana. You would think that you could get across the water in a small boat. Tamalomar bal telech bo oni shayit, that you cannot go through it. Oni means from onia, from the boat. Shayit is with oars, with a galley with oars. You can't cross it. So small boat you can't. Yachol yavrenu beburni gdola. Maybe you can cross it with a large boat. Tamalomar v'tzi adir lo yavrenu. Even a gallant ship cannot traverse this water. My mashmo. How do you know what tzi adir and oni shayit mean? Kamitargim Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef, again, remember, he was blind, so he wasn't around to Torah Shbechtav, he couldn't do because he had to do a Baal Peh. So he's an expert in the Targum with the translation. So how does he mitargim that pasuk? Lo tazel bei bisfinat saidin. Can I go into it with a fisherman's boat, a small boat, the boat of trappers? Uborni rabati lo tiguzina. And now traverse it in a large boat. So that's the translation of Tzei Adir and Oni Shayit. Amri Yudah ben Pazi. Af malach hamavet en lo reshut lavor betocho. This water is so strong that even the Malach HaMavet can't cross it. Tivacha bal telech bo oni shayit. Says over here that they can't, this small boat or the boat of oars can't cross it. Tivata mishut ba'aretz. The Satan had been floating around back and forth through the land when he comes back to Hashem, and Hashem says, ah, did you see my good guy Yov? And over there it says, mishut ba'aretz, from floating around down the earth. So shut and shayit, so he connects the two. So even the one who's shut, who floats around, normally can't cross over the water. Amra Pinchas Mishum Rav Huna, Tzipora, from Rav Huna from Tzipori, Ayana Yotzei Mibay Kodesh HaKodeshim, this spring that comes out of the Kodesh HaKodeshim, again we saw this in Shkalim, B'tchila Domeh L'Karnei Chagavim, originally when it comes out, it's such a thin stream that it looks like the antennae of locust, or grasshoppers, Kevin Shegiya L'Petach HaEichal, once it reaches the doorway of the Eichal, Naseh Kechut Shel Sheti, becomes as thick as the thread of the warp, once it gets through the Yulam, then it becomes like the erev, like the warp, the thickness of the warp, which is thicker than the woof. I mean, that, I'm sorry, the woof, which is thicker than the thread of the warp. Pentach azara. Once it reaches the door of the azara, naseh kepi pach katan, becomes like the mouth of a small flask. It's not. That's what it's meant in the Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Maim mifachim atidim liototzim bitachan miftan abayit. In the future, this is the Mishnah Midot that's describing the Saramayim, and says there in the future there's going to be from the base, from the foundations of the Mikdash, there's going to be water that comes out. What's Maim mifachim? That is like a pach katan, like a small flask. That's where the water is going to come out. From there onward, it becomes bigger and strengthens. Until it reaches the doorway to Beit David. That's in Zion or in the Ir David. Ir David, if you know, is towards the southern side of Yerushalayim. It's on the southwestern side of Yerushalayim. So it says the water is going to flow out and then down towards Ir David. It'll pass by the palace. By that time, Kevin should be the path of Beit David. Become like a rushing river. Zavim vizavot nidot viodot. That they're going to wash themselves. They're going to purify themselves in there. The zavim, the zavot, the nidot, and the yodot who have to get tara in a mikveh or tara in ma'im chayim. They're going to go there. Shenemar vayomu yeh makor niftach the Beit David. On that day there will be a spring that opens up the Beit David. Uliyoshvei Yerushalayim. Those that live in Yerushalayim, the chatat uvenida. For cleansing and for sprinkling. But here the Gemara takes it literally, the chatat l'nida, and the nida will be able to go into this water in order to be mitaher herself. And that's how good this water will be, or how deep this water will be, that she'll be able to use this for her tahara. Now this is a pasuk we quoted from Yechezkel, Zechariah, and Yishayahu. They're all talking about Tilavo, that there will be a spring of water that comes forth from Yerushalayim. So the Gemara is connecting all these three to bring proofs as to what the nature of this water is. So Rav Yosef says from here, you see that a nida has to go into the water until her neck. And the loch is not like him. Now, what do you mean the loch is not like him? Of course, she has to go up, she has to go fully into the mikveh. What Rav Yosef is describing here is that the mikveh has to be so deep that she could stand up in it and the waters go up to her neck. That means it has to be a very deep mikveh. And the answer is that that's not the loch. The loch is that she has to be in a mikveh 40 sa'ah. As long as you get it to 40 sa'ah, it doesn't have to be a super deep mikveh. And that's what he says over here, that as long as she can get her entire body into the water, that's what she has to do. It doesn't have to be a super deep mikveh. And that's what they reject here. Tosafot over here, it says, Shalu mikamei Rav Yehuda Gaon, tefilat nida midoraita minolan. How do you know that a nida has to go to the mikveh from the Torah? So you say, v'shiv kal v'chomer mimaga. He said, if someone comes into contact with her, they have to go to the mikveh, then certainly she has to go to the mikveh. If she can make someone else tamei, they have to go to the mikveh, so then she has to go. Because it calls it mei nida. What's mei nida? Mei nida is waters that are ra'uya for a nida. So that's the hint in the Torah to this. V'ri perish minichtiv adava benidata. V'shina bebe aisha benidata tehei ad shetvo b'mayim. What does it mean? Davah benidata, she will remain a nida until she does something. What is that? She has to go to the mikveh. So here they're searching for the fact that it doesn't say explicitly in the Torah that the nida has to go to the mikveh. It just says as long as she's a nida, she's tumeah. How do we know that she has to do something to remove the tumah? So that's what they're looking for, that source. And there you have the three different options as to the source of nida midoraita. Okay, we'll stop over here.
Well,